The Bob and Yart Live Telethon is on again. Keeping Bob and Yart Live on the radio is a labor of love that demands our attention every now and then. And he needs your help to stay on the radio for another year. Go to the KGov.com website, click on the store, look at the subscriptions, take a look at all the wonderful products. Sign up for a subscription to Bob's Bible Study, the sermons from Denver Bible Church, or the best of Bob. Go to KGov.com to make a donation, purchase a product, or sign up for a subscription today.
Warning, warning, there's truth ahead. It gets beyond all the headlines you read. Don't need lip service with a wink and a nod. You need a man on a mission from God. Well, not to worry, here's Bob and Yart Live.
Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob and Yart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. This is Theology Thursday. Typically, we look at the news of the day from a Christian worldview. Today, we look at the source of the Christian worldview, God's Word.
Welcome to our study of Ezra. Please turn to Ezra chapter 2. And here I'd like us to turn to Jeremiah chapter 1, just to get a little history of this town, one of the more colorful ones, and one that we normally don't recognize. The men of Anathoth, 128 men returned. Now this Anathoth is mentioned 20 times in the Bible, and one of the mentions is from Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 1, which reads, "The words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priest who were in Anathoth in the land of Benjamin." Remember we said in Judah, it was the tribes of Judah and Simeon and much of Benjamin and a little bit of Ephraim and most of the Levites. Well, this town of Anathoth was of the tribe of Benjamin, which was caught in the division between north and south in the south. And if we go forward in Jeremiah to chapter 32, I want to read a bit about what happened to this town. Now, the book of Jeremiah mentions Anathoth seven times, and three times it's mentioned in the first verses of Jeremiah chapter 32. But let's skip down to Jeremiah 32, verse 27, where God is talking about Anathoth, and he's angry with them. In Jeremiah 32, verse 27, "Behold, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything too hard for me? Therefore, thus says the Lord, behold, I will give this city into the hand of the Chaldeans, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and he shall take it. And the Chaldeans who fight against this city shall come and set fire to this city and burn it, with the houses on whose roofs they have offered incense to Baal and poured out drink offerings to other gods to provoke me to anger, because the children of Israel and the children of Judah have done only evil before me from their youth. For the children of Israel have provoked me only to anger with the work of their hands, says the Lord. For this city has been to me a provocation of my anger and my fury from the day that they built it, even to this day, so I will remove it from before my face." And now God is slamming this city. Then he moves on to a more general condemnation, not only of Anathoth, but of Judah and Jerusalem. Jeremiah 32, verse 32, "Because of all the evil of the children of Israel and the children of Judah, which they have done to provoke me to anger, they, their kings, their princes, their priests, their prophets, the men of Judah, and the inhabitants of Jerusalem." Notice that if you were a priest, that did not mean you were righteous. And we pretty much have that in our minds because the priests were priests by birth, and just because your father was a priest, as with Aaron, two of his sons were killed by the Lord because they were evil. So we're familiar with the notion that many priests were evil. But how about the prophets? Well, it was similar with the prophets. For a time, God called prophets individually, but then around the time of Samuel, being a prophet became a profession. And there were schools or colleges of prophets in certain towns that became specifically known as a town where prophets were trained. And so God says, you're provoking me to anger, your kings, your princes, your priests, your prophets, the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And they have turned to me the back and not the face. Though I taught them, rising up early and teaching them, yet they have not listened to receive instruction. That rising up early, I think it's a reference to with Abraham, the patriarchs. Abraham was called out of Ur of the Chaldees, where pagans worshiped false gods. And then God worked with Isaac and with Jacob. Verse 34, but they set their abominations in the house which is called by my name to defile it. In the last verse we'll do here. And they built the high places of Baal, which are in the valley of the son of Hinnom, to cause their sons and their daughters to pass through the fire to Molech, which I did not command them, nor did it come into my mind that they should do this abomination to cause Judah to sin. And that's a verse well known to those of us who hold to open theism, openness, to where the future is open. God is free. God is living. He has free will. And in the future, God can do what he chooses to do. He's not locked into a certain future, as though he has no choices to make in his own existence. And so here we see that the wicked things the Jews did, where they built altars to Baal and to Molech, and they took their babies, their sons and their daughters, and they burned them alive to offer them as a sacrifice to Molech. And God says how evil this abomination was, that it is something he did not command them, nor did it come into his mind that they would do such a wicked thing. By the way, they built this altar in the valley of Hinnom, the Hinnom Valley. And if you transliterate that into Greek, from Hebrew to Greek, you get Gehinnom, Gehinnom. Does that sound familiar to anyone? Where was the valley of Gehinnom? Well, if you think of Jerusalem, on the south end of Jerusalem, they had the refuse gate or the dung gate. That's where all the trash was hauled out of the city and the waste would flow. And that's where the city dump was. And the city dump, typically throughout history, is on fire and it burns. It's a lot of good fuel. And it just, when I grew up, the city dump in Prospect Park, New Jersey, it was always on fire. And we were kids. I'm sure we weren't supposed to go to the dump, but nobody ever told us this explicitly. And we'd go to the dump, and we would remove shingles that a truck had dumped on top of the dump, and we'd pull off shingles from the top of the pile, and flames would spurt out. It was always on fire, even in the wintertime. I'm sure it was dangerous, but we were stupid. We were kids. Well, the same was true for Jerusalem. The dump was always on fire. But that had also been a place of sacrifice where they burned their children alive to the false god Molech. And so the name of that valley, Gehinnom, was transliterated into Greek as Gehenna, and it became a name of hell, a symbol of the eternal torment of hellfire. Well, now please return to Ezra chapter 2. All that in Jeremiah, just to give you an idea of the drama behind one little city, Anathoth, with now 128 people returning there. To us, it's just a name and a list of genealogies. But to those who lived the history, these family names were significant, these place names, brought up many memories and emotions. And now verse 24, the people of Azmaveth, 42, the people of Kirjath Arim, Chepirah, and Beeroth, 743. By the way, Kirjath Arim there, Kir or Kirjath means city, and Arim here is streets, so that's the city of streets. The people of Ramah and Geba, 621. The men of Michmas, 122. The men of Bethel and Ai, 223. Those two cities are known to us if we've studied Genesis and Judges, and they're close to one another. And Bethel, remember Abraham built an altar there, and Jacob saw his ladder to heaven there. And that name, Beth, is house in the Bible, in Hebrew. Beth is house, and El is God. So Bethel, Bethel is house, the house of God. By the way, that when Israel split, that became a center of idolatry until King Josiah destroyed the altar there. And I think that was at the very northern end of the territory that Judah held to. And Ai, remember that was the city of Israel's embarrassing defeat after their victory at Jericho. God reprimanded them for their pride. They thought they could take Ai in their own strength, and they were routed, and God sent them back there then with an ambush that was successful. Verse 29, the people of Nebo, 52. The people of Magbish, 156. The people of the other Elam, appreciate the clarification, 1,254. The people of Haram, 320. The people of Lod, Hadid, and Ano, 725. The people of Jericho, 345. The people of Sina, 3,630. Now, the people of Jericho, God had said when Jericho was destroyed, there was a prophecy they should not rebuild Jericho, and if they did, the builder would pay for it with the blood of his firstborn and his youngest. And centuries later, Jericho was rebuilt, and according to the story, that's exactly what happened, that the builder lost his sons in the process, but then that city was repopulated. And it remains so to this day, one of the oldest cities in the world. Now, verses 36 through 39 give us a census for the returning priest. And there was a total of 4,289 priests, that is, men of the family of Aaron within the tribe of Levi. Verse 36, the priests, the sons of Jediah, the house of Jeshua, 973. By the way, if you recall, David in 1 Chronicles 24, David took the priesthood and divided it up into 24 divisions called 24 courses, or 24 divisions of the priesthood. And those 24 had jobs to do throughout the year in order. They'd start with the first and go through all 24, and through the year, they had their certain times when they did their priestly duties. Well, after the Babylonian exile, 20 of those 24 divisions were lost to history. They were gone. The priests who returned, there were only four divisions. And we have here the priests, the sons of Jediah of the house of Jeshua, 973. Well, Jediah was the ninth course of the 24. The sons of Immer, 1,052, he was of the 16th division of the 24. The sons of Pasher, 1,247, he, it seems, or we can determine, I think, was of the 5th division. The sons of Haram, 1,017, he was of the third. And so now those are the only four divisions of the original 24. So what did the Jews then do? Well, we know from history, Josephus tells us, that they took those four and they subdivided them and took families within these four and used the same names of the original divisions. And so they reconstituted the 24 so that John, the husband of Elizabeth, was of the division of Abijah. Well, how did Abijah come back into existence? That was the eighth course. And Abijah never returned from exile. Well, they took these four and they split them each into six, and Abijah the eighth probably came from the sons of Immer, who's here listed as the second. Now, verses 40 through 42 list the Levites. Now, what's the relationship between Levites and priests? Well, Levites are also of the tribe of Levi, but they're not descendants of Aaron. And whereas about 4,300 priests had returned, only 341 Levites are listed. That's quite an imbalance. We see that again later in Ezra chapter 8. And it could be because of the different social status. You're a priest, hey, you're descendant of Aaron, the high priest, you've got a much more important role than if you're a Levite, which means you're a servant of the priest. So be a servant is not all that exciting of a title in society. And so possibly many of the Levites living in Babylon, they thought, hey, you know, this is a pretty comfortable life, and we're in relative security. And in this pagan society, nobody cares that we're only Levites and not priests, so we're going to stay here. While the priest had more at stake, and many more of them returned. Verse 40, the Levites, the sons of Jeshua and Kadmiel, of the sons of Hodaviah, 74. The singers, the sons of Asaph, 128. 42, the sons of the gatekeepers, the sons of Shalom, the sons of Adar, the sons of Talmon, the sons of Akub, the sons of Hatita, the sons of Shobai, 139 in all. Now the next verses, 43 through 54, speak of the Nethinim. We've talked about them when we've studied Esther. The word Nethinim means those given to the priests and Levites. The general linguistic and historical meaning. The Bible has 18 mentions of the Nethinim divided between Ezra and Nehemiah, except for one mention in 1 Chronicles listing them with the priests and the Levites. In our Nehemiah study, we learned that the Nethinim were non-Jews who were servants of the priest and of the priestly tribe. But how did that get started, that the Jews would allow non-Levites, non-Jews even, to serve the priest as helpers? Well, that tradition you could trace way back to Moses, who, remember, he had married a Gentile. His wife's name was Zipporah, the daughter of Jethro, the priest of Midian. And in Exodus 18, we read that Moses had obviously allowed Jethro to offer sacrifices to God, which was a priestly function. And he let this Midianite priest do that. Now, Jethro had apparently put his faith and trust in God when you read the story. And Jethro also counseled Moses on how the priesthood should function in its role as judge. Well, we don't have any extensive history of Gentiles serving the priesthood between Moses and Ezra, but we do have a story in Joshua where, if you remember, the Gentiles known as the Gibeonites deceived Joshua, made him think they lived in a faraway land, and he made a treaty with them that they would not destroy the Gibeonites. And then Joshua found out that they lived smack dab in the middle of Israel. And he was angry with them. He didn't violate the treaty, but he compelled them to be servants for the altar of the Lord. So we read in Joshua 9 that Joshua made the Gibeonites woodcutters and water carriers for the altar of the Lord. So by the time of the Babylonian captivity, the Jews used this here term, the Nethinim, to designate foreigners, non-Jews, who were integrated into Jewish life, culture, and even worship by serving those of Levi. And so many of the names of the Nethinim here listed and elsewhere are known by linguists to be foreign names, not traditional Jewish names. So that to this day, it's difficult to make the charge of racism stick against the Jews, as I've pointed out elsewhere, since there are European Jews and there are African Jews, black Jews, perhaps even a very few Arab Jews. I have never met any. You met any? Oh, yeah? All right. Art Risley met one. Russian Jews, even Hollywood Jews, of all blasphemies. And today's nation of Israel, by law, accepts these people, whatever their ethnicity, as citizens. So how could liberals hold that Israel is racist when any and every race can be a citizen by converting to Judaism? Jewish teaching has always permitted Gentile converts, and historically, while Judaism has not been an evangelistic movement that they're trying to get converts, such converts were typically accepted. So we read the names here of the Nethinim who came back from the captivity to help Zerubbabel with the rebuilding of the temple. The Nethinim, the sons of Ziha, the sons of Hashufa, the sons of Tebath, the sons of Keras, the sons of Siaha, the sons of Padan, the sons of Lebanah, the sons of Hagabah, the sons of Akub, the sons of Hagab, the sons of Shalmai, the sons of Hanan, the sons of Gedel, the sons of Gahar, the sons of Riah, the sons of Rezin, the sons of Nakoda, the sons of Gazam, the sons of Uzzah, the sons of Pasiah, the sons of Besai, the sons of Asna, the sons of Meunim, the sons of Nefushim, the sons of Nefusim, the sons of Bakbuk, the sons of Hakufa, the sons of Harher, the sons of Bazloth, the sons of Mahida, the sons of Harsha, the sons of Barkas, the sons of Sisera, the sons of Tama, the sons of Neziah, and the sons of Hatifa. This next group is unknown beyond the description here given, and again has a number of non-Hebrew names. These are in verse 55, the sons of Solomon's servants, the sons of Sotai, the sons of Sophereth, the sons of Peruda, the sons of Jala, the sons of Darkon, the sons of Gedel, the sons of Shephatiah, the sons of Hatil, the sons of Hachareth of Zebaim, and the sons of Ami, all the Nethinim and the children of Solomon's servants were 392. Now this next group consists of those of uncertain genealogy, which was a definite handicap in ancient Israel, specifically precluding you from the priesthood. Verse 59, and these were the ones who came up from Tel Melah, Tel Harsha. By the way, a tel was a hill made up of cities built on the ruins of previous cities. So then after a few generations of cities getting wiped out by an army, they build a new city, eventually it becomes a hill. And they made some pretty big hills, building towns on top of towns a dozen times over. Cherub, Adon, Immer, but they could not identify their father's house or their genealogy, whether they were of Israel. So here's people who didn't know really what tribe they were from. The sons of Deliah, the sons of Tobiah, and the sons of Nakoda, 652. And of the sons of the priest, the sons of Habiah, the sons of Kaz, and the sons of Barzillai, who took a wife of the daughters of Barzillai, the Gileadite, and was called by their name. These sought their listing among those who were registered by genealogy, but they were not found. Therefore, they were excluded from the priesthood as defiled. The Jews were very particular about their genealogies. And you're a priest, your father was a priest, show us your birth certificate. Show us the documentation. I can't. Well, then you're not a priest. And that's cool, because that led to the time of Christ and our certainty that he was of the tribe of Judah, of the family of David. Verse 63, and the governor said to them that they should not eat of the most holy things till a priest could consult with the Urim and Thummim. And those were stones held in the garment of the high priest, and he would use them, pull them out, like drawing straws, like drawing lots. But they were never found or used after the exile. At this point in time, they were lost and never recovered. The whole assembly together was 42,360. And this is the same total as given in Nehemiah, but neither here nor there do the itemized numbers tally to this total. So that there may have been an initial scribal error or errors, but a positive note is that at least in the thousands of years since, there's been no effort by the Jews to correct the numbers. If they didn't have a high regard for the text, they would have easily just fixed it. But even though it was an obvious error, they have faithfully reproduced that error for now over 2,000 years. Verse 65, besides their male and female servants, of whom there were 7,337, and they had 200 men and women singers. Now these singers are not the Levitical singers for worship, as in verse 41. These were professional entertainers likely, including the women. Verse 66, their horses were 736, their mules 245, their camels 435, and their donkeys 6,720. Some of the heads of the fathers' houses, when they came to the house of the Lord, which is in Jerusalem, offered freely for the house of God to erect it in its place. According to their ability, they gave to the treasury for the work 61,000 gold drachmas. That's a lot. How much is it? Well, a drachma was about a fifth of an ounce. So this is about 12,000 ounces of gold, or roughly 700 plus pounds of gold. So the priests and the Levites, some of the people, the singers, the gatekeepers, and the Nethinim dwelt in their cities, and all Israel in their cities.
The Bob and Yart Live Telethon is on again. Keeping Bob and Yart Live on the radio is a labor of love that demands our attention every now and then. And he needs your help to stay on the radio for another year. Go to the kgov.com website, click on the store, look at the subscriptions, take a look at all the wonderful products. Sign up for a subscription to Bob's Bible Study, the sermons from Denver Bible Church, or the Best of Bob. Go to kgov.com to make a donation, purchase a product, or sign up for a subscription today.